morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrat, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. I think we have a really interesting program for you today. It's on local issues of education. And first, I want to introduce Mike Cosentino, who's been here for decades. And I'm going to embarrass him by saying that he was an extremely popular, beloved teacher in high school before he started teaching in college. And Mike's really up on these education issues, and it's been close to his heart in the 8 years we've been doing the show.
Well, that's very true, and so I'm glad to be doing this morning with Dennis Dearden, who's going to be on in a minute, the superintendent of Cotton Oak Creek. We have Karen McClellan here from the Sedona Oak Creek School Board, talk about geography is everything. And so we're going to talk a little about Sedona schools in Sedona. But first, we do want to mention that since it is Memorial Day, we do a show on Memorial Day. If Monday holiday falls on a Monday, we do a show. But I'm going to take a little different approach to Memorial Day today. I'm looking at the Howard Zinn approach. Some of you guys know Howard Zinn wrote The People's History of the United States. We used it in AP social studies classes at the school I worked at for a long time. I understand conservatives are coming up with an answer to Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States. Two big volumes of American history written from the people's perspective. And Howard Zinn wrote an editorial in the Boston Globe in 1976 that said, "Memorial Day will be celebrated by the usual betrayal of the dead, by the hypocritical patriotism of the politicians and contractors preparing for more wars, more graves to receive more flowers on future memorial days. The memory of the dead deserves a different dedication to peace, to defiance of government," is what Howard Zinn said. Now, the Boston Globe didn't print that. After he sent it in, they said, "Nah, we're not going to print this." So we read it here on Democratic Perspective today. At least we read the first paragraph. The sentiment is true. If you want to, we want to recognize, certainly, as a veteran, as spending 9 years in the military, want to give veterans all the credit and more that they deserve, that we get none from, by the way, from this particular president. But certainly those that gave the full measure, as Abraham Lincoln said, we want to recognize on a day like today. There are Memorial Day services all over the country today, and certainly some in the Verde Valley, and my heart is with those men and women. And so this is our Memorial Day mention for this year.
And when you're our age, almost all of us know somebody who died in Vietnam, so we do want to remember those folks who, whatever they thought of the war, went and fought for the country over there. Let's start the show, Mike, and introduce Karen a little bit, and we're going to focus on local issues. And Mike saw it as a teacher all these years, not as an administrator. You see it as, you never taught, right,
no,
Karen? You've been a school board member. You're the longest school board member in the history of the Sedona school board system.
17 years.
17 years. Oh, my gosh. So tell us a little bit about what's happening, and then we'll introduce Dennis. Or maybe we should introduce him first.
Let's introduce him first.
Dennis, are you there?
We're going to be talking.
Go ahead, Karen.
Yeah. Dennis will be calling in, so a little technical difficulty connecting him, so we'll continue with that. You see, a lot of the issues we have here in Sedona reflect a lot in the other areas. Sedona, like a lot of smaller towns in Arizona, has got some declining enrollment. We don't have a lot of family housing. We don't have a lot of jobs for people with children in that age. So we've been struggling for a couple of years with the issues of how do you create an excellent school district where you know that the enrollment is going to be essentially what it is today. We can't be looking at huge increases in enrollment, which has led us, as everyone knows, to having closed a school, a year ago, one of our elementary schools. So we have one elementary school now for grades K to 6 and one high school for grades 7 through 12.
We do have Dennis on the line. Yeah. Dennis, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you well.
Okay. Yeah. glad to have you here. And we've got one person in the studio, and we got one person on the line.
Yeah.
And
we're just so high-tech.
Tell us a little bit about Dennis, about yourself. You're the new superintendent of schools up here.
Well, I come with 40-plus years of experience. I was a teacher, by the way, for 20 years before I got into administration, and had it in somewhat a storybook career. I've been a principal at a junior high, a high school, an assistant superintendent in one of the biggest districts in the country in Fairfax County, Virginia. And I had the opportunity to serve, I guess this is my third superintendency in Arizona, and then served with AASA, the Superintendents Association, for 3 years and helped develop the National Superintendent Certification Program, where over 300 superintendents have gone through that program over the last 4 years.
Well, that's great. Superintendent certification, what a good idea. I have to admit, hi, Dennis, this is Mike Cosentino. I'm co-host here with Steve. I was in a classroom for 30 years, and I was a federal projects director for a while. We have this nice little school district, we have this nice school board person here, we have this new superintendent, and we all want to be positive, but I'm going to grill you. especially you got this storied background. You were a social studies teacher in a classroom for 20 years. You were a coach. You were like a lot of men in secondary education. They went into it so they could coach, and the education part was just kind of secondary.
Well, not true for me. I've always felt that great leaders, no matter what they do, they're successful, and it doesn't come easy a lot of times. But I've been successful because I've been able to create solid teams. I've been able to rally communities. I've been able to increase student achievement, no matter what the environment that I've inherited.
Why did you want to go into education? And that sounds great, Dennis. And I sandbagged you, and you did wonderful. Thank you for doing that. What made you want to go into educational administration back there? You were in Simpson College, you're in Iowa, and you got, got corn and hogs every place.
I grew up in poverty. I had no reason to be successful in many ways because I came from a very dysfunctional family with five stepdads throughout my young childhood. And if it wasn't for teachers, I came to school for safety many times. And what I learned very quickly that if I did my homework, I came to school on time, I learned to smile and had a great attitude, teachers rallied around me and gave me great advice. They paid attention, and so I couldn't wait to get to school. And then one day in fourth grade, a teacher come up on the playground. I was kind of standing alone and put his arm around me and said, Dennis, look out at all these kids. And I did. And he says, someday there'll be kids, you'll have kids like that, you'll be a teacher. And he looked at the building, and he said, see that building? There's where all the teachers reside and make sure that every student learns every day. Someday, you're going to be a leader in a building, you're going to be a principal. And he walked away, never said another word. And that day, I made a commitment to be an educator and never have looked back and never wanted to be anything else. I've had tremendous passion for helping kids like myself succeed.
What a great story, Dennis. You're getting harder and harder to beat up, but let's try this. What do you do to, you say you came to school for safety, and as a teacher, I saw plenty of that. In fact, that was the hardest part of the job. Here in the Verde Valley, it's not like I taught in inner city L.A. or Chicago. I taught in Cottonwood, Arizona. And
everywhere.
Yeah.
The thing that got me down the most was seeing their stories every day and their suffering and their struggle. And and each individual, as you know, so we're going to, what are you doing? But this show is about education in Sedona. What are you doing to keep Sedona kids safe? How can you give them the same experience you had?
Well, number one, you've got to have, that's got to be a high priority. We've created five high priorities in the district as a way to have common language and points of emphasis and so forth through our strategic plan. And one of them is positive, safe, and healthy environments. That and student achievement has to be your highest priorities. Keeping kids safe is the most important thing you can do. So we take that very serious. We work with law enforcement. We work with several agencies in the community to make sure that's always happening. My situation was a little different. It wasn't because it wasn't a safe school. It was because it was the only I felt safe in school. And then I had to go home on the weekends and in the evenings. So mine was a little bit different. Mike, you made a really important point, and I know you were a good teacher from what you just said, and that was that I heard those kids' stories. That's one of the most important things teachers can do to connect and build relationships, care about students, is hearing their stories, seeing their face, not just as a data point for a test, that type of thing. And so I applaud you on that comment.
Well, that would be the lead in, and as I was driving in today, I was thinking of this, and that's exactly, schools aren't set up for that, Dennis, and you know that, at least Arizona schools. Two things I want to cover. Your boss over here, Karen McClellan, on the Sedona School Board, mentioned enrollment, because that's always on an administrator's mind, whether it's school board or the working administrator in the school, because enrollment means financing, period. Those two things. So when an administrator or a school board person says enrollment, what they really mean is money. And it's so difficult to run a school of relatively low enrollment because you're going to have relatively low financing. And that affects everything. It affects the programs you can offer. It affects the safety, the different kind of safety. It also affects the time that a teacher is going to have to listen to the story, to connect with a student. I'm an old guy, so the studies, but I'm sure Dennis is familiar with this. I'm sure you're familiar with the studies that say if a kid can connect with one person, it doesn't have to be a teacher. It could be a custodian. It could be anyone. Sometimes it could be a fellow student. And sometimes it goes a real, but any connection allows them the safety that we're talking about, or certainly the feeling of safety. So how can you, as the educational leader of Sedona, so I'm getting to a question here eventually, how can you, as the educational leader of Sedona, help Karen form in the schools the time where students and teachers can interact in those positive ways?
Well, it is, and you've hit on all those. The funding, you know, we've lost, I think, if my statistics are accurate, almost $4.5 billion since 2009. And I was coming from Fairfax County, never had been to Arizona, where we were still complaining about money, but we almost had triple the amount of money that Arizona does, and we still had to do the same thing. We had to create an academic environment where kids succeed, keep kids safe. So it becomes difficult. When I came into this district, I think we were $1.4 million cutting things and massive cuts of teachers and downsizing because we were closing a school. Yet we've overcome a lot of that by restructuring. And my priority was to make sure that we didn't lose programs for students. Yet we analyzed every program to see if they were working or not. If they weren't working, we got rid of them. But for the most part, we had to suck it up and do some restructuring. You'll see this year, I'm going to take on the role of not only superintendent, but principal at the high school. Our HR director is taking on two roles. She's the HR and finance person. And many of our central office people are doubling on their duties so that we can provide a culture of excellence, a culture where we are building relationships like you talk about. And so that, to me, that was the first thing that I needed to do. I needed to create this culture, and we still have a ways to go.
We're
bringing in some unique programs that are going to help, like Capturing Kids' Hearts next year, and a leadership program called Leadworthy, where we're going to do that throughout the whole district, which covers a lot of these type of things: relationships, attitude, confidence, bullying, cyberbullying, those type of things. But we're going to cover all those things. But my goal, you have to model as a leader. You get what you expect. And as a leader, when you come in a district, they look at you very closely. Are you doing the same thing with building relationships with your staff, building relationships with students? And I've always put a high priority on that. I have an outstanding board that I works well together, and I think believes in the direction we're going. Because if you don't have a strong board, you're not going to go anywhere. It doesn't matter what your belief system is. So I've been blessed with that. But we certainly have some challenges. Declining enrollment is very difficult here, and recruiting the very best teachers, because that's where it starts. Is finding the teachers. We were blessed with teachers that care about students here, but a lot of them are retiring. And I think we brought in 13 new teachers this year from all over the country. I think representing 10
or 11 different
states.
Out of a staff of how many, Dennis?
And that was a high priority for us, is those teachers that can build relationships and create an academic environment where kids are succeeding.
How many teachers you got at Sedona School District?
About 52, I think.
52.
Let me ask Karen. I know
the 25% of the staff. That's a lot. Go ahead.
From living in Sedona, Karen, that the school board went through. I know you've been beat up on by the public for closing the school down in the village of Oak Creek, and now you're closing the administration building. I don't think I hear all the rhetoric attacking you guys, but I don't think you would have ever done anything like this unless you had to.
No, closing the school was, sort of a financial necessity. To have kept both elementary schools open would have meant fewer programs, would have meant students without some of the resources, because we couldn't provide two of everything. And closing the one school and moving all the elementary school to one site has made a big difference. They have a full-time counselor. Before, with two schools, they had two part-time counselors. So there's access to some of those things. And on those issues, I know that always comes up in Arizona as one of the worst states for counselor-to-student ratios. So next year, we've got a brand-new program, and we're working with NAU, and we're going to have a Master's of Social Work candidate from NAU working down in the schools a couple days a week as part of their classwork, so we can have get the resources for someone with that specific skill set, which is a little bit different than a school counselor. On a way that we can afford to do that.
So when you hired Dennis, you explained to him the difficulties the district faced, the declining enrollment, or he knew what he was getting into.
He knew what he was getting into because he obviously had already done the research, and we talked about all of those issues, and we were hoping to find somebody. We're really lucky to find somebody as much experience as Dennis, who had been through some of these same situations of a school with, real issues and sort of turning things around on, creating.
Yeah,
taking,
as cynical as I am, it does sound like you're lucky. But the other thing I'm saying that is really difficult, hard to prepare for, maybe nobody can prepare for, coming from a budget of $4.5 billion, Dennis. That's half the budget of the entire state of Arizona. And I'm not talking the educational budget. I'm talking the entire budget. Yeah. Corrections, education, everything is about $11.5 million in Arizona. You came from a district of almost half of that, down to about $1 million. We throw these numbers around, and I know to the public.
When I came from Arizona, people told me how bad it was. In fact, they were trying to discourage me. Why would you want to come to Arizona? When I visited kind of fell in love with the environment. But here's what I found. I found the quality of teaching was really, really good here. And because we didn't get as much money, not nearly as, you know, not even close, and had to do the same thing, the same accountability. And as resources have diminished over these last, you know, 9 or 10 years in Arizona, the accountability has increased. So teachers have had to do much more with less. And to be honest with you, they've done an incredible job. There's great superintendents in this state. And they've done amazing jobs with very little resources. And as we're doing, we're trying to keep by closing the district office, me taking on another responsibility, several of our leadership team members doing the same. We've been able to add programs. We've added music in at the elementary this year. We've added AP capstone, college capstone as another pathway for students. And we're partnering with Yapavi, for example, to create a program where incoming freshmen can get an associate's degree by the time they graduate. So we're doing a lot. We're trying to move our district forward with more rigorous types of curriculum and pathways. At the same time, we've sacrificed and tried to do it at the administrative level to keep it away from our students and create an environment where we want Sedona to be a destination district where kids really want to come because everybody knows your name. You have an opportunity to for extracurricular activities, athletics, clubs. We're going to provide transportation to Cottonwood this year.
That's great. You have the size of district that can do that, and that's a really, really, I mean, it's really good to hear you say that. The just to give a little history here, a little history lesson since I can. We don't talk about education nearly as much, so I'm obviously taking an opportunity here. You know, Sedona and Sedona kids went to Mingus for years, and I loved having them. They were a great part of the school. But somewhere around the mid-90s, Sedona finally got around to building their own school, and they did what a lot of new high schools do. They started with the first 2 years. So we lost our 9th and 10th graders at Mingus that came from Sedona, and they came over here. And then from that, they developed what is now Sedona High School. Naturally, you had 9th and 10th graders that were going to Mingus and that then were going to Sedona, and then the next year you created your own class of 11th graders and your incoming 8th graders from West Sedona and those days at Beaver Creek School where your district office is and isn't going to be for a while. Okay, well, all went to Sedona High School, and then eventually you got to a senior class. And it was formed under the Brown University's Ted Sizer, was a real educational entrepreneur, I guess, or certainly innovator would be a better term. Ted Sizer at Brown University was the model for Sedona High School back in the day. And, of course, as a teacher, we used to make fun of the school board at the time came up with a discipline program for teachers before they came up with a discipline program for students. And, you know, so I guess that's where their priorities were. But it certainly has come a long way since those days. But as Karen and as you understand, as a small district with the enrollment that you have, you may not have a physics class because every year you may not have some of the specialty classes that parents like. It warms my heart to hear you say you're doing AP and you're retaining AP and you're getting music in the elementary school, but all because you guys are, or at least in part because you guys are doubling up on administrative jobs. Wonderful. So I got to hand some compliments back to you and Karen. You know, you're limiting administration to put it in the classroom. I mean, you hear that all the time from the Arizona legislature and probably all legislatures, but they don't actually do that. Arizona still is about a little high. I think 2% of your budget is what they consider ideal to be spent on administration. There are some districts where it's 8 and 9%. There are many, many districts where it's 4%. It'll be interesting to see where after you guys shake it all out, what Sedona's percent of budget on administration will be after this.
I know you don't probably have the exact figures for next year, but give us a little sense of the size of the school district, how many elementary school kids, middle school, and high school kids you have, so that folks who are listening in may not know the size of the high school, for example, Dennis.
Well, it's a junior-senior high school combination, and that's worked well the last, several years that they've had that. We have about 140 students at the 7th and 8th graders and about 300, maybe 310 at the high school for a combination of 450 at the junior-senior high school. At the elementary, we have about 325 students. So about 800 students, I think, we have right now, which, you know, because of the closure of Big Park, we lost some students to Oak Creek. We hope to attract some of them back. I meet with parents all the time, especially this last month, that are considering coming back to our district because they like the direction that we're going. So our job is to make that happen. But you're right. When you're scheduling and doing a master's scheduling, it's very tricky because of the numbers. We can't offer courses every year, and some things we got to rotate them and alternate them different years. So it makes it real tricky.
How about shared programs? What's one? But, you know, Mingus is so far away. Camp Verde is so far away. Flagstaff is so far away, at least when it comes to a school day. I mean, they're not far away. You know, with Flagstaff, 50 miles and whatever the other communities are. But when it comes to a school day where you want to share a program, it does make it difficult. But are you anticipating any shared programs with some of these larger schools?
Yes, absolutely. And I think we have not taken advantage of Yavapai College. I think we can create some great opportunities with them. I've met with the dean, and they're excited about working with us to create a pathway where kids can get their associate degree. We're looking at other opportunities and increasing our CTE programs for kids that need more of a career technical education experience. So we want to create these, and I think we have to look at online type of things. You know, some districts are doing some very unique things that can be shared through online experiences with us. And we can do the same thing for them, especially in rural Arizona. So it forces us to think out of the box to create exceptional programs for kids. If not, I don't think they're going to get the experience that they need to be successful in college and so forth. And my goal is to make every kid successful.
Let me switch hats here and not be such a teacher advocate for a minute and say, well, what about evaluation? How are you going to guarantee, how are you going to help have good teachers? I agree with you 100%. Arizona teachers are above and beyond, and they work, they're high quality for low pay, and it's an amazing, amazing thing. Usually you get what you pay for. You know, you get more than you pay for in Arizona when it comes to teaching. But what are you going to do for – do you have any ideas? Does Dennis Dearden have – we're talking Dennis Dearden here, superintendent of Sedona Schools. We got Karen McClellan, a longtime board member here in the studio. So we're trying to get a little insight into, as the school year ends here, what's going to go on. But I'm shifting the focus here from students and all of that to staff. As you said, it really happens here. What kind of evaluation, how can you help? Are you going to have some sort of, you know, we like to say in service and nobody has to be, do you have some kind of continuing education thing for teachers?
We have a mentoring program for new teachers coming on board with the number that we brought in. That was one of the questions. It's really interesting when you get, we really had a great recruiting year. And one of the problems we run into is obviously the affordable housing and that type of thing, but we keep our fingers crossed. But once we get them here, we have to create this culture where they want to stay. And teachers leave, believe this or not necessarily just for money. Most of it's because they don't feel a caring an environment where they are nurtured and they feel that they belong to something special, or two, they leave because they're not growing. So we have to have a really good professional growth program and evaluation program that's based on growing teachers and helping teachers succeed. And we will do that.
Are you going to get the classroom and do some evaluating?
Where they want to stay. And we know that most of our teachers live in surrounding towns. They can't even afford to live in Sedona. And yet many of them want to come because of Sedona, the beauty of Sedona, the environment, that type of thing. So that creates a challenge for us, too. So there, we have to create this environment where they feel comfortable. They're blossoming as a teacher. And through our, one of the things we're doing, too, is we've had a professional development early release at the high or at the elementary and a late start at the high school. And that creates some problems because we can't get the entire staff together when we need them for staff trainings that certainly affect the entire district. So next year we have changed that. We will have a early release on Wednesdays. So we'll have some opportunities to not only do individual things at each site, but to bring staff together for staff development.
Let me ask
the
both
of
you.
Do, Mike, I think it's pretty unique here is we measure culture. We measure culture on 10 different dimensions, starting with goal focus, how they communicate, how they how we communicate as a district, our problem-solving adequacy. There's 10 different ones, and three of them are really closely tied to student achievement, and that's how well they how cohesive they are, how well they work together, goal focus, and adaptability, and that's the ability to change to meet students' needs. And if those three are low, student performance is not far behind. And so what we're trying to do is not take that for granted. It's looking at all dimensions of our culture and how we can focus on creating and not just guessing and hearsay, well, this culture is bad or this culture, this part of the culture is good. We know with a certain amount of accuracy where we're at and where we need to go with that type of thing.
Let me ask both you and Karen, what can the public do to support education here? I know that we pay our taxes for the school district, but what else can the public do? What could the public contribute to creating the kind of environment that you're talking about?
I can jump in on a couple of things. We know over years in Sedona, we're really lucky that we have a population of retired people with a lot of interests and a lot of experience in all kinds of fields. We've always had a lot of people coming and volunteering and helping, and that's always an option. And that's something we've sort of struggled with and hopefully continue to get to a cohesive sort of program to make it easy for somebody to call up the district and say, I'm a retired math professor, what can I do to help? So we always have the opportunity for the community to come in. We've got a number of people who've work in the classrooms with the students. We have volunteers who work with some of the after-school activities. So all of those opportunities are there. And we've got a really unique community here with a lot of skill and a lot of things. The West Sedona School for a number of years. Next year we'll have a full-time librarian. For some years in the past they didn't. They had volunteers in their library. The volunteers were all retired school librarians, which is things that lots of communities don't have. That's been the same thing in passing our overrides, is that we have a community that's very educated and very aware of that.
So your continuing education, though, is going to be through early release or late start, depending on the school. One of my pet peeves, although there's certainly two sides to this, is that you have to impact student time, an education in order to be able to get your staff together rather than pay them a little extra and get them together at night after school or on Saturday, which I was always open to. Yeah, give me a little more money. I'll be there. I'll be there for on Saturday. But you don't have that option because you don't have any money.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So, you know, what we try to do is create the best scenario that we can for students and staff. And going back to what Karen says, our community has been very supportive, indicative of the passing of the override, which really concerned me because that would have been another $800 plus thousand dollars that we would have lost. But you know, we worked very hard and shared our vision, and it worked out. Another example of this is I started a Sedona Oak Creek Education Foundation, which is not a new concept to many school districts. What's new is that for us is we're actually doing something with it, because many districts have that and they receive no money over time for that, and so they just dissolve. But we started it in late December. I think we finalized through our attorney the paperwork and probably the third week in December, and in 5 months we've raised $420,000. And all that money has gone to scholarships for kids. So we're putting back into kids. 15 kids are going to college out of our graduating class of about 60. 15 of them, just because of this foundation and the generous donors that we had come forward. And it all started with a $10,000 donation, and then people got inspired and grew to 420 currently. But 15 kids are going debt-free to college.
Wow.
Which is a great gift, not only to them, but to their parents also.
That's a real big one.
I want to underline that, Dennis, because that's really important that in this state, in this day and age. You have a foundation. You can put money into it. You know, there's the Yavapai Foundation. There's the Sedona 30. There's organizations that are philanthropic by nature that I'm sure you and others are going to seek some support from, but right here, right now, we're saying on Democratic perspective that Sedona Oak Creek School District has a foundation that you can contribute to if you want to make some impact and on lives, on local. You drive around this town, these people serve you, they take care of you, they work
how,
at your
how
house.
Would you reach the foundation, Dennis? How would you connect up with it if you wanted to make a donation? I mean, it's a practical matter.
Yeah, just call the school and talk to myself or Sally. Contact me, and it's a very easy process. Basically, you just write a check out to the Sedona Oak Creek Educational Foundation, and it's tax deductible. And we've been very blessed. I've been very cautious in my career. I never go out and ask for money. In many cases, and I think the people that I have spoke to around this community and different organizations, from the Rotary to Sedona 30, I've spoken to all of them, and not once have I asked for money. I share our vision. I share the excitement that we're trying to create in our schools, and you know, bless their heart, they have come forward with money and so forth, because I think people get tired of a superintendent or leader constantly asking for more money and that type of thing. I often ask, what can I do for your organization? And sometimes they're shocked, but I feel that the district must give as well as receive things. We've got to be making sure that we're moving in the right direction that our community is proud of.
Let's be honest, with all the great teachers and other and clear and well-run administration, good school board, you guys still need money to do the job. Let's
absolutely.
Just be just frank about it. You need money.
You know, 85% of our money from the budget from the state goes to salaries. And so, you know, that doesn't give you much left over to run the school. My goal personally, and I may be far off, but for that Sedona Oak Creek Foundation is, you know, if we just continue to get money on the scholarship side, that really benefits school. I'm really proud of that. But we also got to create a pot of money on the other side to do, you know, programs for our school, curriculum, those type of things, needs that teachers have through grants. So my goal is to raise another $500,000 on that side for potentially a total of $1 million in 1 year. And I know that's a lofty goal, but I think it's certainly doable.
But I think of all the places that may be doable, Sedona could be the place. You guys certainly, Sedona thinks they have some special things going on here. This is one of those special things that could really make an impact that Sedona,
could be a game changer for our school district, and could put us in a very elite status in terms of the things that we're doing, and it could be become a destination school for area kids that would like a small environment with some unique opportunities.
Dennis, you've maintained the music programs and the art programs and the sports program and the technical education programs despite all these budget cuts?
Yes. In fact, we have went from a half-time theater arts program to a full-time next year. We've added music at the elementary, and we have replaced our programs with some high level that have some great skills in those areas. But when you do those things, you got to sacrifice somewhere. So closing the district office, we're sharing transportation with Beaver Creek. We went to a half-time special ed director. We doubled up HR and finance. I'm doing principal superintendent. And all of our leadership team are doubling up on all their responsibilities. But because of that, we're able to keep it away from our children and add a few programs and keep the ones that we think is making the biggest difference.
Well, the special needs program is probably at once the most difficult. The state tries to give you a little extra money for that, and you need, obviously, as we keep saying, twice as much as they provide, at least. As a former special ed teacher, and this is close to my heart, too, though I never did teach special ed, I dealt with those students in many, many ways. What can Sedona offer? I mean, you guys, you just said you went to a half-time director, but are you going to be able to offer the services that the special needs students need?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I'm very proud of our special ed department. Our teachers do a wonderful job, and I have a background in special education. I got into it after about 10 years in teaching, where I had a lot of special ed kids and at-risk kids, and I was very successful with them. And so I thought, and my second son is a special needs student that we adopted. Uh-huh. And so I had a very high interest in that area, so I went back and got a degree in special ed. So I feel very comfortable that we're going in a good direction. And can offer the types of programs that special education kids need.
Okay, I'm going to take a break here. We're talking to Dennis Dearden here from Sedona Oak Creek School District, a unified district. We're talking about a lot of the changes. You might want to listen to the show on podcast later. Go to Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org, and you can, in a day or two anyway, you can listen to the show. We want to make sure that you know about some of our supporters. Democrats of the Red Rocks is one of them, and they are going to have their monthly breakfast on June 20th. They're going to have a wonderful state legislator candidate called Felicia French from Pine, Arizona, candidate for the Arizona Senate. You're going to have Coral Evans, who's the mayor of Flagstaff, will be here in Sedona on June 20th at 8 a.m. at the Old Sedona Bar and Grill at 1405 Highway 89A. 1405 Highway 89A is where Democrats and Red Rocks have their monthly breakfast. Felicia French, Coral Evans, mayor of Flagstaff. Good stuff, folks. Are you guys good? We got Carolyn, who's also involved in DOOR. Are you going to be meeting over the summer?
Yeah, we'll be having meetings all during the summer. And just one thing, we've been talking about money. The way we get more money for education in Arizona is electing more people to our legislature who put public education first. And Felicia French is one of those. Coral Evans is considering running for the legislature in our district.
Oh.
So they are both people very aware of the public education's needs. So that's something we all need to do, is elect people who say they really will put some more money into public education statewide.
And we'll that's a really important point that people don't talk about.
Yeah, this is not a magic thing. We elect these whack job Republicans that have ideologically based ideas, and cutting education is one of them. Thank you, folks. Don't forget VBID.org. VBID.org is where you can find us. Thank you.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.